The question of what makes something contemporary has been on my mind for quite a while. I can't really say why, but maybe it's because I've sometimes felt like I was born in the wrong generation, like I missed my moment. There's something so seductive about the idea of being in the right place at the right time, but personally I've always felt like I got here late and I've been catching up ever since. If you've listened to the podcast before, you might have heard me reference something that Daniel Lanois said when we spoke a few years ago. He suggested that contemporary work is less about the tools we use or the technology we employ, and more about the mindset we bring. In that framing, anyone who's alive right now and committed to creating in the present moment is, by definition, a contemporary artist. Their work is contemporary. And sometimes they align the mindset and the method. And you get a perfect storm, something that feels both of the moment and about the moment. But the deeper point is that the old idea of innovation as a linear response to what came before, that's gone. That's a modernist way of thinking, and we live in a postmodern world. In a postmodern world, there's really no such thing as new. There's only just you. Which is kind of beautiful, because it means that to make a meaningful contribution, you don't have to invent a new sound, you just have to tell the truth in your own voice. In this multidimensional pop culture landscape, we're finally allowed, maybe even expected, to simply be ourselves, no matter what the trends say. Because the trends don't last long anyway. And in the middle of this chaotic, borderless musical ecosystem, a kid from North Carolina can come along, channel the American Songbook, get Instagram famous by posting videos of himself, and get signed to one of the most iconic jazz labels in the world, all within the space of a year. A perfect storm. It can happen. Just ask my new friend Aaron. Welcome to The Third Story, I'm Leo Sidran. Aaron Stornajello, better known now as Aaron, with an exclamation point on the end of his name, was still a student at the University of Miami when he went into the school's recording studio to capture a few jazz-inspired songs he'd been working on. He had studied classical guitar at the North Carolina School of the Arts, film scoring and jazz guitar in college, and had already done some time playing Nat Cole and Sinatra songs for seniors in retirement homes. At some point, he started posting short videos online, little performances on guitar or piano, and people began to respond. He was encouraged, so he kept going, and he developed a style of songwriting that he now calls vintage pop. And just before he took a semester abroad in England, he decided to record a small batch of original tunes with his friends at the college studio.
All that's inside me is left in writing, and the note slipped under the door. And if you read it, I think you'll see that yours.
What came out of that session became Cozy You and Other Nice Songs, an EP which ultimately came out on Verve Records earlier this year. And the record he made, it's just really impressive when you listen to it. And it's really good. I mean, it does not sound like a student recording. It sounds like something that was made by seasoned professionals in LA or New York or Chicago. It sounds like it was made by people who really understand the idiom, from the songwriting to the performances to the arrangements and the production. The fact that it was recorded before Aaron even signed with a major label, before he was even 21 years old, makes it all the more impressive. Of course, he's not the first artist to try to update the Great American Songbook from a contemporary perspective in one way or another. I've talked to quite a few artists over the years who have dressed up today's ideas in yesterday's musical clothing. Rachel and Vilry.
Any little time could just be standing in a line, but then I get to thinking about the time when you loved me, and every little time I'll cry.
Madeline Peru.
You can cry a million tears, you can wait a million years. If you think that time will change your ways, don't wait too long.
Or Andrew Bird.
Some people was an angry, thin-skinned man, couldn't get along with his one-man band. To stick rocket and nails in his pocket, and the crying shames of people is his name.
And others who put fresh paint on classic constructions, like Jacob Collier.
Fascinating Adam, you got me on the go. Fascinating Adam, I'm on a quiver. Pop, 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 what a mess you're making. The neighbors want to know why I'm always shaking, just like a flavor.
Bye, buddy, buddy.
Each morning I get up with a song.
Bye, buddy, buddy, buddy,
to find out not enough work has been done.
And John Batiste.
I went down to St. James Infirmary. And I saw my baby there.
And all those conversations are in the Third Story archive at third-story.com. When it comes to Aaron, he approaches the material with a natural ease. It doesn't feel like an act, it feels like him, being him. I started paying attention to him on Instagram because, of course, that's where he blew up. Because he's a kid, where else is he going to blow up? He blew up on Instagram, and I've been following him for a while. And I'm not the only one. Among his early champions was Ryan Lerman of Scary Pockets fame, and incidentally, another previous guest on The Third Story. Ryan's been a kind of guardian angel to Aaron, helping connect the dots between internet success and the real world, if there is such a thing. So I finally reached out to Aaron, and I met with him on a hot June Friday afternoon at the Universal offices in Midtown Manhattan, which is a slightly surreal place to meet. It's a huge corporate space that is home to multiple labels under the Universal umbrella. When you walk into the lobby on the ground floor, it's just like, you know, one of those places where you realize that money is still being made in the music business. Artists are concerned that there's no money, that it's hard to get paid, how do you make a living, whatever. Well, I can tell you, having just been in the Universal offices, that it seems pretty clear somebody is still making money. Aaron was freshly signed, fresh-faced, and slightly stunned. We talked about music, songwriting, identity, social media, and how he's trying to keep his head on straight in a moment of sudden momentum. He speaks with the humility of someone still trying to catch up to the moment he finds himself in, and with the curiosity of an artist who's only just getting started. There is no telling why this kind of music connects when it does, or how a new artist like Aaron can reach millions of people playing songs that sound 100 years old, but here we are. And ain't it grand? Third-story.com is the place for the archive for all the aforementioned episodes, the ones with Madeline Peru, Rachel and Vilry, Andrew Bird, plus other talks with contemporary neoclassicists like Samara Joy, Benny Banach III, Cat Edmondson, Emmett Cohen, Stacey Kent, and postmodern revisionists like John Batiste, Jacob Collier, Lewis Cole, Jack Stratton, and Lawrence. Visit my Substack for writings, musings, dispatches, updates, and all the episodes, of course. It's leosidran.substack.com. And don't forget, we are made in partnership with WBGO Studios. Visit wbgo.org/studios to find out more about all their award-winning content. Here's me and Aaron, exclamation point, in the Verve boardroom talking it down. So, man, Aaron.
Hello.
We're sitting in this boardroom in Verve Records. It's big time.
It's fancy, right? It's kind of weird.
You walk into the lobby of
Universal. It's like, whoa.
Rock stars on the wall, select video. What does this feel like to you, all of this?
It's really weird because it's been so low-key for so long. And just like recently, it's been like, whoa, Universal has an office? This is crazy, you know.
It's been low-key with Universal in particular, or your whole trajectory, your whole thing?
I've done like so many gigs for so little people.
Mm-hmm.
And just kept making music when nobody cared except for my parents and my friends. And it's cool. It's kind of my mind has to catch up to the external stuff, you know.
Are you 21?
22.
22
as
now.
Of 2 weeks ago.
Oh, something. When's your birthday?
May 20th.
That's my daughter's birthday.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's so cool.
Happy birthday.
Thank you, and to your daughter as well.
Did you finish college?
Yep. Just like 2 weeks ago.
You grew up in North Carolina?
Yeah, research.
Parents are musical or not?
I think they are. They don't practice anything, but they both sing along to things.
Do you have siblings?
No, only child.
Same.
Really? That'll mess you up.
What do you mean?
It just makes you interesting, right? I guess that's why we're talking in a boardroom right now.
There's a cliche about only children that they skew older, that they relate more to adults, that they're like little adults.
Oh, whoa.
You know, yeah. You spend more time with adults, I think, or alone when you're an only child.
True, yeah.
You ultimately connected to and are connecting by playing music that's for older people generally, like a genre that is often associated with kind of maturity and vintage, old school.
Totally. I don't know how much one can change the association that everybody in the world has with a genre, mm-hmm. but I think that, like, back in the 40s, the people who were doing this music weren't old. You know, they were my age.
Yeah.
I think there's a youthfulness that makes things energetically just different.
Right, so people, young people or whatever, whoever, anybody, could hear this music and feel like it's for them, that's not throwback.
Also, we've, like, hit the point of almost, like, 100 years since this stuff where it can be brand new again, you know?
The other thing that I've been thinking about, probably for as long as you've been alive, is this race to the end of history, in the sense that if you think about the way popular music unfolded in the 20th century, it was this genre followed that genre, followed that genre, followed that genre, and it was a response to what had come before.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're raised with YouTube and everything all available at the same time, there's no more historical development of anything following anything else. It's just like, it's all possible.
Yeah.
It's all available.
Whoa.
And I think that you're, you know, a perfect example of that, because as much as you got into this stuff, you know, you started playing other kinds of music. Your parents played rock music for you in the house.
Yeah.
You had a rock band in college also?
Yeah, that was great. It was with like three of my friends.
What were the influences?
Well, I was trying to make it indie. I don't really know what indie means. I don't know that anybody does, but just like there's some tropes and like some things that you can draw on that, I don't know, makes people dance and hopefully mosh. Mosh is like the
You're trying to get people
standard.
Moshing.
Exactly. Always.
Okay.
But that like helped me write in a pop way. Coming back to the jazz thing after that experience was like, I don't know, it's different.
Having thought about writing standard style songs but with a pop aesthetic or mentality.
Yeah.
Like what? Like making sure they're catchy?
Yeah. Sometimes if I'm writing a song, I don't write it down or record it. And then if I don't remember it, then I just have to make a better one, you know.
So I've heard people talk about that. If you don't write it down and you still remember it, that means it's worth remembering.
Yeah.
And you feel that way sometimes.
Generally. Yeah. But recently, I don't know. I don't trust my memory as much. So I kind of just record everything.
Yeah. Makes sense. I mean, I've heard people say that too, but I don't trust myself at all to remember ideas.
Yeah.
Especially in the middle of the night. Do you ever have them in the middle of the night?
Oh, yeah. That's when the weirdest ones happen. And I like read it in the morning and I'm like, I don't know.
What did I mean?
Yeah.
So your parents were playing you rock music, whatever, you were into rock music. It seems like John Mayer hit you hard at some point.
Yeah. Well, why does it seem like that?
Because you quietly confess it on Instagram every now and then, play a tune where you let your John Mayer flag fly a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, man, he's great. I don't know. I like the way he writes and thinks.
So was that maybe originally the kind of artist you thought you'd try to be like?
It was like a weird mix. So there's John Mayer in there.
Yeah.
I think Jacob Collier was in there for a bit.
For sure.
I was trying to do the getting really good at a bunch of instruments thing. And I was like, you know, maybe I don't have what it takes. Maybe I'll just learn how to write songs that I really like.
There's that one tune, it's more of a finger-picking tune. What tune is that?
Oh, yours? Only You.
If it were only me, I wouldn't have a problem living happily, tucked inside a corner with a ginger tea, flipping through the newest self-help books I found. But they can't help me like you do.
Wow.
That's got the Collier. That's like, to me, like that's where I was hearing less of like the bossa or the swung thing, more and all that movement in it. I hear Jacob Collier in you, for sure.
That's cool.
In every sea there's a mouth of a river where waterfall riches flow down. Why do they cry? No one knows why. In every mouth there's a word of forgiveness that melts all the ice to the ground. Why do you sigh? I don't know why.
And also, like, I've been told that we look alike.
Yeah.
in line for a Jacob Collier concert, and people were like, did he go undercover?
They thought you were him.
Is he in line? Yeah.
By the way, Aaron, you went with the single name plus exclamation point.
Yeah. It's bold.
It's a long line that goes from, I guess, Prince and Madonna through Levé and
Dodi. My thing was the last name is too long. It's Storni Yellow, and it's like 11 letters. I don't even know if that'll fit on the vinyl.
Right.
So
right.
The main issue was how many other Aarons are there, but it's okay.
To claim Aaron for everyone.
I know.
So that's the exclamation point maybe gives it a little like.
Yes, that was the search engine. How do we make it different, you know?
It is bold, I guess, especially because it's not Madonna. It's a pretty common name, so
yeah.
You're claiming it for yourself.
Maybe I'll take off the exclamation mark at some point.
Yeah, maybe you won't need it anymore.
There's also a phase where I was just like excited about everything. Like the pop group that I was in was Sunny Side Up. Exclamation mark. Everything excited.
Was positive.
Oh, I just want a girl to give that jacket to. Cause my closet's full of clothes. And the hangers are getting a bit tough of hanging on. I just want a girl to give that jacket to. Cause my closet's full of clothes. And the hangers are getting a bit tough of hanging on.
And then maybe as I get more jaded, I'll turn it into like a Aaron period. I don't know. Aaron question mark.
Aaron three dots. Semicolon. So did you go to the North Carolina School of the Arts for high school?
Yeah. Wow.
That's a great school.
I know everything about.
You've got a team that provides us with this information.
Oh, that's crazy. Wow. Still getting used to that. I hope I never do, actually.
You might eventually.
I don't know. I feel like getting used to it has with it, like taking it for granted, something I'm actively fighting hard against.
Is this something that you dreamed about?
No, it's like bigger. I was down to just play music at retirement homes and bars, like at background music.
When did you do the retirement home thing? In high school or in college?
High school.
What would you play?
All the songs that they like grew up on. So like Nat King Cole, Ella, Frank Sinatra, like all that.
Is that what sort of got you familiarized with that material, or you already liked that before you started doing it?
I liked it before, and it was just convenient that they also liked it too. And it was weird, like there were songs that I didn't know anybody else knew, and then they would like know all the words.
You learned this stuff because you had a guitar teacher who turned you on to jazzy stuff?
Yeah, his name was Stan Jocks. He was like 80 when we were doing lessons. And yeah, I'd just go over to his house and he'd tell me about his life. And then show me some songs.
Before you got to meet with him, you were playing rock music. You were into rock guitar?
Pretty much, yeah.
Do you remember what the first thing he showed you that turned you on to another sound was?
I think I met him at like a music store. He was like off in the corner playing like some weird chords. I was like, whoa, I want to do that. And it was The Shadow of Your Smile, like some guitar arrangement he had. And it was like, woo, this is cool.
And so he played you these records, you heard the singers, you heard the construction of the songs.
Yeah.
Did he teach you standards? He taught you the tunes?
I think so. Kind of hard to remember, but I'm sure. Yeah, he did. He did. Like Satin Doll.
Is that what led you to go to the North Carolina School of the Arts, or you were already headed in that direction, you think?
It was kind of an odd move going to the School of the Arts because, well, it was a boarding school.
Yeah.
And it was all classical.
Hmm.
And I didn't really know any classical music, not like classically trained or anything. But I wanted to write for big band, and I was really into like composition. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of applied, and they just kind of accepted in a way that was like, well, this kid doesn't do any of what we do here, but maybe he'll like it. And I did. I loved it.
What was it? Had you gone to camp or anything before you did that, or was that your first time really being away from home?
I'd been to camp, but I don't think a sleepaway camp yet.
Only child, you go to boarding school.
Yeah. What age is that? Is that 16?
Depends what year you were. Sophomore year?
I went junior year.
Yeah, so 16 maybe.
Yeah, wow.
You know what's funny? You're 22 years old, and you're talking about something that happened 6 years ago. 6 years to me at 48.
42 wasn't that different.
Kind of the same, pretty similar. But it's funny when you're at an age where like probably every month seems like an era, another era.
Yeah. I wonder if you could do that if you wanted to.
You know when I think it happens for me? When I travel, like I'm also a musician. When I go on the road, every 2 days feels like a huge distance. You've gone, especially if you go from one country to another country or one city to another city.
Yeah.
And you just think, man, a week ago I was in this place with these people, now I'm here. That definitely feels that way.
Yeah.
But when you get into the routine of your life, it's not necessarily, not only is it not necessarily sad, I mean, some people actually aspire to it.
Oh, yeah.
You romanticize that in your songwriting.
Oh.
You know, you play with the tropes of, yeah, of like, let's get a house and a baby. That's the coziest thing. All of the kind of like the imagery of safety and familiarity, that's all in the writing.
Cozy you, cozy me, and a baby, that's the coziest three. Little house, a little tree, what a cozy possibility.
Especially saying that thing about you, we'll get a little house and a baby is the coziest three. Like, because I know that on the one hand you see these as vignettes of your life. That,
I don't have a kid.
No, you don't have a kid. And do you want that right now?
Sometimes I wish I could like split my life in two and like see these different directional like branches where I could go, marry the high school sweetheart, move to the suburbs, have kids, put them to school. You know, that thing. I do feel like that right now is not the path I'm on, but I can still draw from it because I think it is, this is maybe a little metaphysical, but I think that is kind of happening too. A different me doing his thing.
And when busy life goes rushing by, you and I will stay cozy inside. It's not that we won't have fun, but the best parts of life's cozy up with someone.
Are you a romantic? Do you fall in love easily?
I fall in love too easily.
Mm-hmm. He's in there too, man. Chet is way in there.
Aw, he's great.
I fall in love too easily. I fall in love too fast. I fall in love too terribly hard for love to ever last.
It's weird, I never listen to him.
Hmm.
I think generally, like, when people hear male jazz singer and it's loud, they're like, oh, Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, and when it's soft, quiet. It's Chet.
But there's some really nice early Sinatra, and that's kind of my big influence.
If I don't see her each day, I miss her. Gee, what a thrill each time I kiss her. Believe me, I've got a case on Nancy with a laughing face.
But Chet's got that straight tone.
That's true.
That I think you have more of.
Thank you.
Some things are clear and some are not. This one's a trick for sure. Some things are locked up and some are free. But something about you does something to me.
I've been playing around with it. There's like so many different ways to sing. Which
that's
I love.
That's also something that I was thinking about with you. You know, this has happened, maybe to you it feels like it's taken a long time, quite quickly. So
no, I agree.
Cozy You is both a document that, you know, one hopes will stand the test of time and is also a snapshot of you in development right now.
Yeah. It's weird because I'm proud of it now, but I'm sure that, you know, a couple of years down the line, I'll be like, why did I do it that way, you know?
So you leave North Carolina, you go to University of Miami, you study guitar and film composition?
That's right. Whew.
you wanted to be a composer. I think in checking out the credits on this record, very low key, doesn't say it here on the back, doesn't say it anywhere else. You produced it, you arranged it. It's not just your tunes that you took to like some LA guys and had them do this thing. You crafted this sound. You did it with your buddies from school at the college studio.
Yeah, this is all like really homegrown. And this is before Verve too.
Verve took the record, but you had made the record already.
Yeah, like it was finished before they were even in the picture, which is cool. How lucky am I that I get to start with this like homemade thing and then Verve comes in and is like...
No notes.
Yeah, let's just go and run with it.
To create the sound that you were going for is a little bit like creating a film score. In that you're deciding on the palette and you're arranging for this particular ensemble. Sonically, also, you're making a lot of choices. And I can see how maybe studying film composition would be real helpful in terms of putting this together.
Yeah. I think maybe I learn more from the classical stuff, though. It's just like reading through like Chopin and Mozart, Bach, all that stuff. Just seeing how they constructed things. And what I've been on now is like listening to like these orchestrations of the Sinatra stuff with orchestra and like figuring out like why did they do all these things and why do I love them so much? And then how can I kind of take some of that and make it me, I guess? Yeah.
I think you've the question of how to make it you and also what does it mean to be modern in this context?
Yeah.
You are modern because you are a modern person. You are modern in that you introduce some images into a really classic format that could only be 21st century images. She never texts me. It's a record that sounds like it was made before computers, and then there's this blatant reference to like a cell phone in the middle of it.
A table for two, just in case she's running late. Just barely missed the train and didn't text me. She never texts me, but I swear I see her every day.
Were you thinking about that at all?
Yeah, I like those things. Yeah, the issue of like, how do you make this modern? I don't really think about it too much because I'm 22, it's 2025. There's an aspect that like just a young person doing anything is like modern, but also the fact that it's not standards kind of helps it.
It's like that it's original song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even more, I try to think of myself less as like a jazz artist. Oh, did I just say that? Yeah, I just said that. Think of myself less of a jazz artist and more of like a songwriter, kind of in the Bob Dylan, Joni Mitchell thing. Even though stylistically it's like, it's not really that. But in the way that they do stories and lay things out, there's some things that just weren't done back then. Like maybe Eggs in the Morning, probably it's too specific to be like a songbook, like older one.
She gave me toothbrush and toothpaste and floss and witty remarks with arms crossed. Now I don't mean to boast, but what thrilled me the most was her eggs in the morning with toast.
Although the frim fram sauce with chiffon.
That's true.
That's pretty much in there.
On the side, yeah.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the frim fram sauce with the awesome fee, with chiffon on the side.
But no, I know what you're saying. Yeah, the specificity of it and the... the description of it. I mean, the other thing is like a lot of those songs, the American Songbook songs, were written to serve the story. Like so many of them were written for a show that had to move a story forward.
Totally.
And, you know, the only story that you have to move forward is like whatever story your story is.
Yeah. Sometimes I wish there was a thing that's... It feels weird to write all these songs and the point is conveying me.
Yeah.
Like, that's not the end goal.
Yeah.
There's something like a higher... goal.
Well, one thing I think that could speak to a higher goal for you is that, like, these are songs that they must be, it must be happening to you already that people are covering. And do you get videos of people singing them?
Yeah. It's so cool. And, like, really rewarding as a songwriter hearing the songs and different people's voices.
Yeah. You know, we talk about what it is to be contemporary, not contemporary. There is a lot of structure in these songs in the way that standards are constructed. I mean, you're basically, and not to reduce it, but you're dealing with a couple of structural forms, AABA being probably the most, like, typical version of it, in which the concept of the hook that is driving pop songwriting is sort of absent.
Totally. That's a big issue. The thing that makes a lot of pop songs catchy is that chorus thing that's repeated. But then here the chorus means like AABA, it means the whole thing. Yeah. You know? There's some workarounds like Cozy You, repeating that at the beginning of every A section.
Yeah.
Kind of does it.
Cozy You.
But one thing I've been playing with is like, what if I write all the same words, all the same music, but just make it verse chorus form, you know? And that's been fun.
And you've been, so you've been playing with that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. I mean, I don't necessarily know that it matters. This is a form of pop songwriting too, but...
Yeah. But it's also like, lots of people now are doing older things, like Silk Sonic.
I'ma leave the door open. I'ma leave the door open.
Even Sabrina Carpenter, like, going back to the old Dolly stuff.
Please, 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 don't prove I'm right. Please, 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 don't bring me to tears when I just did my makeup so nice.
And people can just choose whatever they want.
People can choose whatever they want. And you did choose this. So you had the indie band, you started doing this.
Yeah.
Did you start posting stuff on line and it connected? How did this happen?
Yeah. It was like maybe the first video did well. It was like a cover of me doing Fools Rush In on piano. People liked it. I was like, whoa, I've been doing this social media thing, posting every other day for like a year or so.
Posting other kinds of music?
Yeah. And some jazz, but not really. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, the thing that I've always wanted. People saw it and they liked it. Whoa.
Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. And so I come to you, my love, my heart above my head. Though I see there's danger there, if there's a chance for me, then I don't care.
That's a cool moment of like, yeah, let's try to do this thing. But I do think that I want to step out of the box.
That you put yourself in?
Yeah, pretty early, you know.
You made an EP last year.
Yeah.
That I would say was more out of the box than this is, in that sonically it expands and it contracts.
You're talking about teaching the computer to cry?
There was one that I heard, it's got a drum machine on it.
Yeah, whoa, cool.
Starts out kind of filtered in mono.
I've never met somebody so much like me. Someone as curious, clueless, and careless as me. You're amazing, really. I'm impressed. I've never met somebody so much like
me. Then it expands.
Yeah, well.
Comes back in.
In a moment, we'll start to kiss. And I'll wonder if by kissing you, I'd be ruining this. Maybe it's better not to run the risk to lose a friend and have a kiss. Elizabeth, you're exactly what I want to be.
That's where you're playing with contemporary production and the old production, right?
Yeah.
This Cozy You collection, it's like it's just kind of stays old sounding.
Yeah.
There are a lot of ways to step out of the box and step into the box, right? But I was thinking, well, when you started, it seems like a year ago even, you were like, maybe I'll make it more contemporary sounding in some ways.
Yeah. I think a lot of the early stuff was so carefree. It was like, let me just do things and see what happens. Just throwing things at walls and seeing what I like. But the Cozy You project feels like the beginning of this journey. Where let's start in this box and then we'll see where I take everyone after, you know.
Do you perform with the musicians on this? Have you played gigs with the musicians on this record?
Yeah, tonight, actually, we'll be like with the bassist and drummer, Aiden and Zach.
And are they amazed, surprised, happy, confused?
I think maybe all of them.
Yeah.
But above all, like, they're so supportive and like great friends. And it's so cool.
When you recorded this, you were all still finishing school at Miami.
Yeah.
And you said, I want to go into the studio and make a little collection of recordings?
Yeah. I studied abroad last year.
Where'd you go?
Brighton.
Oh.
Which is like 2 hours outside of London.
Yeah, my dad went to grad school there at Sussex.
That's where I went. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And so before I went off, I wanted to record in the studio. So we did the whole project in like 2 days, like a weekend. It was cool. There's some songs that didn't make it. There are like two others that nobody's heard.
What happened when you went to Brighton? Did you write while you were there? Are you always writing?
Writing in Brighton. Lots. A lot of it was like, man, I'm so excited. So many people online love these new songs. And let me just try to write a bunch. At a certain point, it was like a little puzzle of like, how can I do one thing different from last time? Almost like an experiment of like, this is our constant. Let me just change one variable at a time.
So what kinds of variables would you change?
So this is one recently. Usually the language I use is pretty casual and literal. Like eggs in the morning, table for two, are like, this is what I mean in smallest words.
Mm.
But then I was like, some of the songs I love, like Nature Boy, it's like grandiose words. And so I tried writing a song like that, where it's like
50-cent words in it.
Yeah, bigger than I'm more comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
Or just like trying the verse-chorus thing of the jazz form. And then, I don't know, trying to write really long songs.
Hmm. Some of your songs are very short, actually.
Yeah.
Which is both a function of the TikTok age and also old songs. If you sing an old standard through one time, with no solo space in the middle of it, they are often a minute and a half long, 2 minutes long.
Man, it's so cool that you're a musician and you know all these form things. But I don't know, there's so many cool things that, like, maybe if you brought the songwriters back from that era and they like had this huge body of work to choose from of popular music that they'd like, I don't know, do some
Right, because again, they didn't know what was coming afterwards.
Yeah, no.
When you were in Brighton, this is an interesting thing that you said. Oh, it's so great people like what I'm doing online. You know, you talk about the metaphysics of living in two worlds at the same time.
Yeah.
You're like a exchange student in college, your whole life ahead of you, whatever. You have your friends, you have your experience. But you're also getting this enormous feedback from the faceless internet world that's giving you all this reinforcement. What is that like to hold both of those at the same time?
Oh, it's weird. It's weird meeting people. Let's say you're at a party in Brighton and they're like, yeah, what's your Instagram?
Huh.
Usually I like go around that. I'm like, do you have email?
Right, because you're afraid that they're going to follow you and you've got like 150,000 followers and who is this guy?
It's just like, I don't know, it changes things. Maybe I'm in my head about it, but there's like one of two ways that you react. It's like, whoa, look at you, what's this about? Or it's playing it cool, pretending like nothing happened, which is great, but sometimes it's covering up like a thing. And I think it's because we like romanticize it so much. And I know I've been there. Social media is really weird.
Do you feel that the success, the fact that we're sitting right here in the Universal building, it is a result of the interest that first started on social media?
100%. Yeah. definitely a double-edged sword.
Do you think that at a certain point you leaned into what you saw was responding? Like, you could have been doing the indie thing. You clearly had the potential for it. I'm sure there's other styles or other parts of you that are kind of going unaddressed right now as you pursue this. Was there a moment where you were like, I think I'm going to do this kind of cozy, classic American songbook vibe for a while?
Yeah. Yeah, there was. And ideally, we wouldn't let outside things affect what we create. But part of my goal is to, like, influence... Nah, that's a bad word. To, I don't know, like, give people nice songs and as many people as possible. And part of me also likes as many songs as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely a give and take of follow the...
opportunity.
Like, yeah, but also know when you want to put your foot down and be like, nah, it has to be like this.
I mean, I know that you want to walk back that word influence, but you said at the beginning of this conversation that there is a part of you that hopes that you can help give younger people a reason to listen to this kind of music.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a safe way
of
saying
great.
That.
That's great, yeah. Just because a lot of it's like show and tell. Like, I go into this classroom and I'm so excited. I just found this new train, and I want everybody to love trains.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, look at this train, you know?
But in that case, what you want is for them to have a relationship with you so that when you discover some new kind of thing, they'll still follow you. Like, oh, I wonder what Aaron's into now. Oh, look, he just discovered Brazilian music. He just discovered this. Like,
yeah.
He's going to take us there.
Yeah. And I think in that, it's like when you have a relationship with an artist, it's like, oh, they hear me, you know? It's not, in some sense, it's about the artist, but it's all about the person. It's like what you see of yourself in them. And that's kind of an angle that I prefer to see it from.
Yeah.
Anytime it's like, oh, this is about Aaron. Even this interview now, like, the amount of questions I've asked you, so much smaller, and it kind of bugs me.
I get it.
But I guess it's our...
It is really hard, I think, in my experience, to be asked questions. As a matter of fact, I think the reason I love doing this is because I don't have to answer any questions that I don't want to answer. I can just, I'm curious, I love talking to people, but like at the end of the day, it's about me as much as I want it to be about me, but then it's really about you.
Being curious is the most fun thing.
I agree. And I think that's what creativity is, ultimately, is like being curious. I wonder if I can do this. Do you feel...
Whoa.
Stressed about, that was a weird pivot, but do you feel stressed? You know, like you talk about, I want to innovate, I want to try to do something different every time, change one thing. As it gets more successful, do you get in your head about, I wonder if people will like this one as much as they like the last one?
Well, the cool thing about working with a big label is that there are people to think about that. And in some ways, with other people thinking about it, maybe overthinking about what are people going to like, it makes me freed up in the sense that...
You just make.
I'm the making person, you know. I make the thing. I don't really judge it too much once it gets out of the creative process.
How quickly do you share it with the team after you make it?
Oh, it really varies. Oh, and I've been thinking about this. Like, when you show somebody something, what if they say, oh, I don't really like this part? And then that totally changes how you continue making it if you're, like, mid-process. So usually if I do show somebody something, I'll be like, but like, don't say notes yet. Just like save all of them. And just like, you can listen to it, but don't even tell me if things are good.
Well, because there is that other thing that a lot of people talk about, that the second you show something to somebody, it doesn't matter what they say, you know how you feel about it.
Oh,
by showing it to somebody. Like, all of the problems reveal themselves to you as soon as you show it to somebody else.
Yeah.
You don't even need them to tell you what they are. You know what they are.
Oh, yeah. That's great, too.
How quickly would you put it on, like, before you had your team?
Yeah.
Would you share a half-written song on Instagram?
Totally, yeah. But I still would. I still did, like, a couple days ago. Maybe it's, like, right now I have a lot of trust that I've written a lot of songs and I can continue doing that.
Yeah.
In a relatively affected way.
Yeah.
But I'm sure I'll get to points in my life where I don't feel this, like, ever-flowing fountain. I consider myself very lucky right now.
I have been thinking a lot about that. because I've seen people as they get older, many people who had the fountain, and it slows, and I don't know why it slows. I don't think it slows for me. I don't know if it slows for me or not, but yeah. I have seen other people. I think it's tied to success more than anything else.
Like complacency?
Or the stress of having to be, I mean, once you have let's say you start to have like a lot of success, like Billy Joel, Paul Simon level success. I mean, let's hope that happens for you, but just imagine being in a place where you've had that and then you've kind of like, now you're like.
How do you top?
How do you go back into that well? What do you dig for? But, you know, Paul McCartney can do it. I mean, some people can do it.
Yeah, I think the more that you unidolize all of that and just, that's tough.
Well, that's a long way off. You have
a while.
Where are you living now?
Kind of homeless. So just graduated from Miami and I could live with my parents in Charlotte. Mm-hmm. But right now we're just traveling around, like doing all these cool like meetings with labels, and it's cool. It's hard to let the gratitude catch up to where I am, but it's something that I very much am passionate about.
But you're not really sure where you're gonna land. And do your parents tag along sometimes?
Yeah, I brought them to this LA showcase. Yeah. I think it was last week for the EP release.
Yeah.
And man, it's really great having them because they're like, you can always trust them, or at least I feel like I got very lucky with my parents. And I don't know, all of the industry stuff, it's like I did just meet all of these people who were on the team like a couple months ago.
Yeah.
But like my friends and my family, these are some people who have known me a while.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, let me know if I ever start acting different, you know?
Yeah. And do you think they will?
I think so. I think I got some great, honest friends.
Yeah.
Who have kept me in check many times before. Yeah. Of like, oh, maybe don't do that.
And I mean, are you thinking maybe you'll go to North Carolina, maybe you'll stay in Miami, maybe you'll move to New York, maybe you'll go to LA?
I think I'll move to New York. I'll do New York for maybe a couple of years, and then I really like LA too, so.
So why New York ahead of LA?
Because I feel like I want to do New York in my life, but I can't do New York later. Like right now I want the grimy, like Bushwick, but I don't know if I want that when I'm like 30.
At the old age of 30. What is your relationship with Ryan Lerman? How did you meet him and what role has he played in all of this?
Oh, it's complicated. No, it's not. I love Ryan so much. He is my guardian angel, what's that person in Cinderella? Fairy godmother.
Fairy godmother.
He is Ryan Lerman fairy is fairy godmother.
That's the headline of this episode. Yes.
For people who don't know, Ryan is one of the coolest people. He like works on Scary Pockets. He has his own music that's really great. Yep. Great producer, great guitarist, great songwriter. Can we just talk about Ryan Lerman? Whew. He's so great. He found me on Instagram and then kind of introduced me to the manager and label.
So did you work together a little bit?
No. Part of Ryan is like this unwavering generosity at like times where you wouldn't really expect it at all. We had never met before, but he was like, oh, you're in this city, say hi to my friend and like here's their number. And then I met Honan Ford from that, who was like my first friend in this kind of new world, and she's great.
Friends in this new world, it's like you realize there are fellow travelers along this path.
Yeah.
And you're becoming one of them.
I guess so. Yeah. It's weird. It's cool.
Yeah.
There's great people in this.
There's a story about how at some point, maybe during COVID, you had been playing a lot of guitar and you decided, I'm going to learn piano. I want to play piano.
Yeah. Whoa.
And so you woke up early every day. You gave yourself the discipline of learning piano.
Yeah.
How did that change things for you?
It changed how I arrange things. That's probably the most tangible example. Also kind of changes how you think. Like a lot of it was reading through these Bach like fugues and chorales and just like seeing how all the voices move.
Bye.
And then, like, when I'm listening to the Strokes after that, it's like, whoa, they're actually doing the same thing. It's just like three different voices, the guitar playing one note, singer playing another, background vocals.
I interviewed Jacob Collier when he was 19 or 20. I went to his house.
Wow.
And he said to me at the time that he was listening to two records a day. He was listening to a record on the train on the way into college and a record on the way home from college.
Wow.
You know, it was almost like the information was being downloaded into his like personal hard drive.
Totally.
You know, in that moment. And I think it probably still is, but not at the velocity and the intensity that it was at that time, where it was just he was being updated in real time. Do you feel that you're sort of cooked, or do you think that there's still a lot of stuff that's being added to the pot?
There's new stuff. I'm in this early Sinatra phase, and I think that I will get out of it. Just waiting for the next thing to grab me out of it. Madison Cunningham's pretty close to grabbing me out of it.
Actually, the thing I was thinking about for you as references of people who have sort of toiled in the same space is Andrew Bird.
Oh, yeah.
Who, if you go all the way back to his early records, his Bowl of Fire records, I don't know if you ever heard these records that he made in Chicago. I mean, the first records they made were in front of one ribbon mic, playing with trying to make stuff sound old.
You let me in your house. You let me in your house. You let me in your house with the ammo.
And even the record that they made together last year, I don't know if you heard that, is really a deep one. And it is, interestingly, a bridge between what Madison Cunningham does and what you do.
This might be what takes me out of the Sinatra thing. Thank you, Leo.
You might hear it and be like, what? No.
She was that kind of lady. In times were hard, times were hard.
She come curling around you like a finger.
And she'll leave you crying.
Okay, so Madison Cunningham is threatening to pull you out of the Sinatra.
But I eventually ran back to Frank's arms.
Your team mentioned that Harry Styles is a reference on some level for you. And not just because of the hair.
But mainly. A lot of it's like, I think I just like the air with which people do things. Or like, I don't know, just like the confidence of this is what I want to make and this is it, you know. And I think that's maybe what we're more drawn to than the actual music.
Yeah, because thinking about examples in popular culture of stuff that has been sort of playing with the same sounds that you're playing with right now. Postmodern jukebox that sort of updated pop songs in an old style way. And do you know Rachel and Villery? Do you know that project?
Of course.
He's an incredible songwriter also.
Yeah.
Have you met him?
I haven't.
Have you been in touch with him?
I don't know, but...
You would hit it off, I think, probably.
Yeah, they're great.
But some of that stuff still feels like it's pretending to be from another time, or it wants to be from another time. You know, postmodern jukebox is like they dress in the way of... You look like... You're 22 years old today.
Yeah. I think that's an interesting thing of dressing the part because I don't really do the whole old school thing because that's not like, I don't know, I just don't want to.
Yeah.
Even Leve, like, she wears fancy, cool looking old things sometimes. And I just like, I don't know, baggy jeans and a sweater.
Have you met Leve?
No. It's on the list, though. I would love to.
I mean, it feels like if there's any proof of concept that this can resonate with young people and can be considered pop music and also you know, she played Newport Jazz this year. Like, she's also like a jazz artist. She gets to have it both ways, which I think is what you're looking to do.
Yeah. Man, she's so great. Big, big fan. Yeah.
Don't you notice how I get quiet when there's no one else around? Me and you and awkward silence. Don't you dare look at me that way. I don't need reminders of how you don't feel the same.
I realize as we're talking, and it is a wonderful opportunity, that you are in total transition right now. Like, you don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know what's going to happen a week from now. You don't know what's going to happen 9 months from now. You don't know where you live. You don't know.
Yeah. Who am I? But I think those are fun, the transition things. And a lot of songs come out of that.
You've written, at least on these collections, a lot of love songs.
Yeah.
Are you writing sort of non-love songs also? Or are they still coming out as love songs?
Nah. I'm a lover. But every once in a while, that's like one of the variations I change, you know. It's like, okay, enough. I lean on that too much. I mean, but I don't know, love's pretty cool.
Mm. You talk about, there's a couple references in the songs that I heard just casually where you're talking about, like, maybe I'm not supposed to have kids.
I know what you're, yeah. So the line is, maybe never having kids runs in my family.
Maybe never having kids runs in my family. So put me down for a window seat, a cozy spot where two can eat, and I'll be doing all that I can do at this table for two.
Part of that was, I just thought it was so funny, if not having kids runs in your family.
Then how are you here?
Yeah. There is like the, I don't know, like some really cool people, like John Mayer is up there. He doesn't have any kids that I know of, or that
he knows of.
Maybe he does know them.
Yeah.
Fathers be good to your daughters. Daughters will love like you do. Girls become lovers who turn into mothers. So mothers be good to your daughters too.
I mean, I don't know the details of your childhood. I know the details of my childhood, and I have an only child also, and I'm very familiar with the intensity of the sort of the three-pronged family.
Yeah.
It's a reality, and it also haunts you one way or the other through your whole life, because am I supposed to do that? Am I supposed to not do that? Am I trying to recreate that? Especially if it was positive and good, and it sounds like you have cool parents.
Great.
I have cool parents. I hope my daughter feels that she has cool parents. How do you not aspire to that yourself when it was such a healthy model?
Well, my parents are like such a good model at not forcing anything. They're like, yeah, just do whatever you want. They probably hinted at grandkids at some points, but
yeah,
I don't know. Could be cool. Little errands running around. Mm-hmm.
With exclamation points.
Yeah.
No, you're so young. But it's interesting that at 22, you're like, or 20, you were writing these songs. If you recorded them before you went to Brighton, you wrote these when you were 19 or 20, and you're talking about family.
Yeah, I can dream.
Did anything happen in Brighton, you know, musically or just like world opening, things change for you in any way?
Yeah, in some sense, I like got to be a normal college kid again.
Because in Miami already, people were looking at you differently. They knew what was going on with you?
Just in Miami, I was so music focused, but in Brighton, I didn't do any music classes.
What'd you do?
Astronomy, feminist philosophy, and like, there's one class where we just like gardened. It was great. So, I don't know, getting to see what normal kid is like was cool. And also, like, there's a huge friend group. I don't think I've ever had a friend group of like 10, 12 people in it, but it's like every night, everyone knocks on each other's door like, are we going to the club?
Did you go to the club?
My fair share of times, yeah.
What was the music?
It was like UK garage.
Mm-hmm.
But it was all fun.
So Aaron, if you can manifest, say, a small handful of things that you hope for in the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
What would you say they are? What are you hoping for next?
This is the hardest thing. And kind of one of the transitions I'm dealing with is everything that I've ever wanted has happened. And like, honestly, I felt like this a couple of years before all of this. Like, just in music school, I got to do music every day with my friends. And it's like, man, this is, like, I'm so lucky that I get to be here and do this. And I guess you have to move the goalpost to be striving towards something, but man, I really don't know where to set the goalposts. It's all just really great. There are certainly things that I want to do, but they're all song related. It's like, I want to write a song like this, or I want to try to sing like this, or
full album.
Would like to do that. That's on the list. I'm curious about that.
What about writing with other people or for other people?
I'm down. I'm skeptical, but I'm down.
Skeptical about the success rate of co-writing?
Yeah. In some sense, it's like instead of one person compromising on the line they can't figure out, it's two people compromising.
I've always said that. You know? I always said co-writing means neither one of us gets what we want. I have done it, and yeah. I do. Sometimes you get to stuff that you just would never get to.
Yeah.
It's not what you would do. It's not, and you're always like, I would not have done that.
Yeah.
But that's so funny that you said that was always what I said about co-writing. It's like, I don't understand. Like, nobody wins in a co-write.
But I do think that'll definitely change.
Yeah.
I'd love to write for other people. And
yeah.
That would be really fun. And like, yeah. But I think this jazz, writing in this style, is such a tough thing to do authentically. And I think it feels authentic to me when I write. I might be biased because I wrote it, but
authenticity is a very charged and loaded concept.
Yeah.
And it'll torture you forever if you let it.
Yeah.
I felt that way. But I feel this is authentic to you, at least a part of you. I'm just curious because I just learning what I knew about you, that you had all this other stuff that you were doing and that this is kind of what opened up for you. I'm really excited to see what happens next.
I think, yeah, we'll expand the box a little, maybe jump into a different box, maybe go into, I don't know, globes, spheres.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, why does it have to be a box?
Nobody said so.
Aaron, exclamation point, Aaron. I don't know why I want to say it. I'm looking at your name with it. Aaron, it's such a pleasure to meet you and talk to you at this moment in your life. And I'm a fan and excited for you.
Thank you so much, Leo. Such an honor to be on this podcast.
There he was, my friends, Aaron. What a talented, cool guy. The Third Story is hosted, produced, and mixed by me, Leo Sidran. I'll be back again in your headspace before you know it with another deep dive. Until then, I'll talk to you soon.
This has been a WBGO Studios production. To learn more about WBGO Studios' award-winning podcasts, special concerts, live streams, and more, visit wbgo.org/studios.